This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
I'm Rodney Tipton. We're at Acquiesce Winery in Acampo, California.
I am so delighted to come back and visit you guys. As you know, I met your wife a couple of years ago.
Right.
And what an incredible story. What a rare story in all of California winemaking and wineries that here's a winery that only makes white wine. And as you guys were told when you thought you were going to do this, you can't do that. You've got to have reds on your list. And yet you bucked the tide and you pulled it off.
That's correct. You know, and it's all Sue's, my wife's. It was her idea. She fell in love with the Chateauneuf du Pape whites. She insisted on making them. And we thought, you know what, we're going to take this little four-acre piece behind us. We're going to plant four varietals. And I think the first year we made 275 cases, maybe. And Sue said, well, you know, if it doesn't work, we'll drink them. And I thought, okay, let's see how it goes. That year and every year since then, she's made more wine and sells out usually by first week in November.
And she's held fast the whole time to just doing whites.
We'll only do the Rhone varietal whites, and she will only do stainless. There's...
We both know that white wines are like this little stepchild, you know, of the bold, robust reds. You come into a tasting room, and, oh, we'll start you out with a white, and then we'll move you into the real wine, you know, right?
Right, right. I mean, and I don't know if it's, it might be because, you know, the wine industry is still male-dominated. So that big red fruit is seen as the big holy grail, the sexy wine, and the whites are viewed as more delicate. But when you really look at, and I did early on, I looked at the numbers when she really wanted to do all whites. Probably number one at the time, or number two minimum, selling wine was Chardonnay. So I know people like white wine, and I know it's just not women, right?
Yeah, yeah.
All kinds of people like white wine. It's friendly. It's easy to drink. You don't have to have food with it. I also think that it's more friendly. It's got a more broad pairing ability with food than red does. I mean, you got a big red, you're going to have a big piece of meat. With whites, you can do salads, vegetables, fish, pork, chicken, the whole gambit, really.
And how about the world of rosés? I mean, that's another world that's just been a stepchild and is finally coming into its own.
I think especially in the U.S., you know, from the early pink blush days, you know, that was a really sort of low alcohol sweet wine. It kind of gave people a false idea of what rosé really is. France and Italy and places in Europe, they're obviously their rosé was completely different. And still today, there's a lot of rosés made with the Signet method, which means, you know, someone's making a red wine, they're going to macerate. They want more flavor and macerating the skin, so they'll bleed off some of the red. Right. But Sue wholeheartedly from the beginning said, we're going to grow these vines for rosé, which means we're going to harvest them at the higher acidity, lower sugar, because all we're going to do with them is make rosé. And it turned out well.
Well, back to you guys. What is your flagship? What do people first associate with you when they think of white wine?
Which of our wines?
One that is...
No,
usually the first wine in the lineup in the tasting room is the Picpoul Blanc, because that's the lowest alcohol wine, and you want to be able to taste it. So Picpoul is really popular. Grenache Blanc is the next one in the lineup, and that's really, really popular. But I think the most complex wine we have is the blend, the Bel Blanc. So I would say that's the one with the more enophile person, the one that's really into wine, they're going to lean to go towards the Bel Blanc as their favorite.
And at your winery here at the tasting room, is this where all your production is sold? Is it, or do you distribute to?
No, we're not in distribution, so...
You've got to come to the source.
Yeah, 99.9% of what we sell is through the tasting room. There's a few local restaurants where Sue is partial and to the food there and likes, you know, is friends with the owners, but it's not much. There's no distribution.
So you guys are keeping your little empire under control, so you still have a life then.
Yeah, we decided, you know, when we started it, we said we're going to make sure it's fun. We don't want it to get so big that it's like our old jobs, right? It becomes more of a, you got to keep the production going versus we're doing it to make the best wine we can possibly make.
And still have a life.
Yeah, exactly. So we still have time, you know, for ourselves. We'll take a nice trip to Europe again next year, but should we buy a piece of equipment, for instance, right? If it's not going to make it easier and more fun, we don't buy it. We don't buy something just to make more of what we're doing. So,
well, I think the other incredible story about both of you, you came from, what, Chicago or Midwest? And so at retirement time, or first retirement, the iteration didn't work out. You guys decided to start over again. Your wife decided to become the winemaker with no winemaking experience.
That's correct.
That's incredible.
When we bought this property here, we were both really into wine, both really into food. We both cook a great deal, but we didn't know how to grow grapes. Most of the land we bought here was in Zinfandel. What I said was, well, let's find a place where we can see the sunrise and the sunset. So this is where we ended up. We joined the local amateur winemaking club, the Lodi Amateur Vintners. I was a failure. Sue said it's because she finally said, well, you just don't like to babysit. You got to babysit these wines. And I was doing reds. And then she took over and started making whites. And she said, I really want to try this professionally. And she took off.
And she's been winning awards, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's...
A lot of awards.
International wine competitions, gold medals, double gold medals. She had the best Viognier in California.
Wow.
In 2015, I think it was.
And that was like in her first 4 or 5 years of making wine?
Yeah. Yeah, we're only... This is only our seventh year, so...
That's incredible.
Yeah, she has a real good palate, and she had a good mentor in Heather Pyle Lucas. They're still really...
Doesn't get any better than that, yeah.
No, she's fantastic. And they're still really, you know, the four of us are good friends, and she's been a tremendous help.
And in your tasting room, I noticed a Sunset Magazine cover. What was that about?
Ah, so that was... I can't remember the year now. Maybe it was 3 years ago or 4 years ago. They were out scouring for new wines, and they selected the Grenache Blanc as their favorite new white, because there aren't many acres of even Grenache Blanc in the U.S. And now Sue has Bord Blanc. She's the first in California, and first in the U.S. to have Bord Blanc.
Only because my bus is waiting. I gotta go. But it's been great visiting with you. Somebody want to learn more, you guys... I'm sure you have a website and social media presence.
WhiteWineWinery.com and or AcquiesceWinery.com. Interesting thing about WhiteWineWinery.com is that when I searched for the domain name, I was very pleased to be able to find it, which meant another indicator that we were the only all-white wine winery. And my name is Rodney Tipton.
Rodney, thanks for sharing. What a wonderful day here in Paradise.
Great. Yeah. Nice to see you, Tom.
My name is Susan Tipton, and we're at Acquiesce Winery in Ocampo, California, just outside of Lodi.
So, Susan, you finally acquiesced in life, didn't you?
I sure did. Mm-hmm. We have a lovely vineyard. Our home is in the middle of our vineyard, and now we've got a tasting room, and so we get people from all over the U.S. and the world to come visit.
What I find fascinating is you meet most people, and their granddad had farmed this land, and they grew up in an ag world. You did not. You were grown up in Chicago and a different world, and then decided at, what, 50 years old to make a break?
Yes. So we bought a home in a vineyard, and we started making wine as home winemakers. Just fell in love with the process, and every year wanted to try something new and different. A few years into it, I fell in love with a white Chateauneuf du Pape wine and decided to plant the varietals here in Lodi. We were thrilled with the way it turned out, and so I wanted to plant more varietals. So as a result, we now have a tasting room, and we're sharing our wine.
That's so incredible, because you weren't even a home winemaker 20 years ago. You were not even on that radar. And the incredible thing is the reception and the awards and the acknowledgement that you have received for making white wines. That's absolutely incredible.
Well, I think it speaks to the fact that this was done out of love. Mm-hmm. It wasn't done for those reasons, and that's what surprises me the most today, is how accepted our wines are and loved. We have a couple hundred people on a wait list just to join our wine club.
A wait list for the wait list.
Right. It just totally surprises me, and we're thrilled, just thrilled with it.
I want you to share some of the accolades, which are incredible, that you have received.
We won Best Viognier in California at the California State Fair. We won Best in Class for our Grenache Blanc in Sunset Magazine's International Wine Competition. Most of our wines don't even make it to the competitions because they're sold out before the competitions even happen. Every year we've won at least a Best of Class or a Gold since we opened, so that's been great. And our wines are unusual, too. So when you have unusual wines, sometimes it's you don't really fit into a slot in a competition. Mm-hmm. So just the fact that they're unusual wines and they're winning has been overwhelmingly great.
Another fascinating dimension is you wanted to do just whites, just white wines, and you were told by left and right, oh, honey, you can't do that. You have to have at least one or two reds on your list, and you ignored the advice, and...
Well, we just kept going with the whites. I told the well-meaning people that told me you're going to need a red in order to be successful, I said, well, I'll just drink the whites if I don't sell them, and the first year we sold out, and then every year since we've been selling out of wine. I wanted to focus on them. I always felt that the whites were kind of second-class citizens in the tasting rooms. Whites are harder to make than reds, and most people don't realize that. I remember on a trip to Châteauneuf-du-Pape, France, that the whites were more expensive on the list. I asked the winemaker why, and he said, well, you should know they're harder to make. So even though reds tend to get the higher points and the more notoriety, I just read an article today that the whites are second-class citizens in the point systems even. Yeah. The reds take on the higher points. Even if it's good white, they never get above 92. So, but it's been just a labor of love. So just doing it out of the love of it. And sometimes have some really long days out here in the winery. Mm-hmm. But when I sit back with a glass of cold white, I realize this is why I'm doing it. So.
Do you think it's because whites are generally more delicate, more nuanced and more refined in some ways, and therefore you can't mask and hide flaws?
Yes, I totally think so. When the wines are going through fermentation, we have stainless steel tanks that are chilled to 55 degrees. So when you add yeast to ferment the wines, it creates heat, and so you have to keep them chilled. And I actually babysit them every day. I check them every day to make sure that the Brix levels are dropping just the way I want them to. And I think if you're not a patient person, maybe if you haven't been a mother and don't know how to mother something, you would lose patience with that. It's fun to press the grapes. It's fun to harvest. But the day-to-day work that goes on behind the scenes is very important to get the end product that I'm looking for.
So you came in as a total amateur home winemaker. What was that process of becoming a professional? Did you bring in a winemaker to teach you?
Yes. So when I decided to do this, I'm not totally crazy. I knew that I didn't have the background in winemaking. We knew we were making some good wines, but I wanted them to be the best. I wanted them to be world-class and professional. So I hired a consultant that had, at the time, 30 years in the industry. She was one of the founding winemakers of Opus One Winery, Heather Pyle Lucas.
Oh, yeah, I was with her the other day.
Oh, you were? Oh,
she's awesome.
Isn't she great?
Yeah.
She's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And so we've been friends ever since, and she's been my mentor. We've been to France together. And basically, over the last several years, she's still consulting for me, but mainly in the vineyard. I've got the winemaking process down, but it's all about the very, very best grapes. And so I listen to her advice as far as how the vineyard progresses during the year.
So I guess the big question is, wow, what if you had figured this out and started this when you were 40? Or 30?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the one really interesting thing about winemaking is you only get one shot of it every year. So I look at each year of winemaking as a year of my life. Mm-hmm. And so when you think of how long you're going to live, I think of it in vintages.
Right.
And so I don't regret starting as late as I did because, for me, this is a lot of fun and I'm having fun. I raised three boys that are on their own, and so I have the freedom now to do what it is that I want
to
do.
So meant to be.
Yes, yes, totally.
How cool. So if somebody wanted to learn more about you and your winery,
WhiteWineWinery.com.
Well, my name's Michael. My last name is Perry. I work for Fields Family Wines in Lodi, a very small winery of 1,200 case producer, direct to consumer only. So Everybody's going to have to come see us if they
so
want.
So you have a tasting room?
We do.
And you have a wine club?
We have a wine club, a taste room, all in one building. A very unique kind of place. Matter of fact, if you came out to the winery today, you'd really get a feel for a small winery because we have 15 half-ton macro bins sitting on the floor fermenting. And you get a chance to come in and interact with that when you come in and wine taste.
That's pretty cool. And you have generated a wine club already, right?
Our wine club is our backbone because we don't distribute. I don't remember what the industry average for wine clubs. I think it's 2.5 to 3 years before people move on. Most of our members are 4 or 5 years. Yeah, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And they're great people and help drive what we do, for sure.
When I think for a small family or small independent winery, winemakers, that making it is always the big quandary. You know, how do you keep your costs and mitigate distribution and whatnot? I think that's the brilliance of Wine Club.
It is.
They come to you.
It is. They come to us. And not only do they come to us, they bring their friends with them.
Right.
When two of our wine club members come in and they have two friends with them who are not wine club members, we allow them to extend their discount to their friends.
The friend of the friends might become a wine club member.
Many times have.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we love it. And we do a lot of wine and food pairing, a lot of educational things for our members, maybe that takes it a cut above some other areas and wine clubs, because I consider myself personally a wine educator, and I love the interaction with doing a blending seminar with two of our wine club members and eight of their best friends, because it's like 2 hours of hilarity and fun, and it's just something we love doing. Wine and food pairing is a passion for us. So even though we're a small winery, I think we offer a lot in terms of education, and if people want to know about wines when they come to Lodi, I think they're going to come to our winery and learn a lot. And have fun doing it. It's not like stuffy stuff.
Yeah, and not all wineries by any means have that whole wine education component as a part of their day-to-day program.
Well, I've been in the business 38 years, so hopefully I've learned a few things that I can bring them to the table. Yeah. But more importantly, you know, for me, wine in the years past, somewhat stodgy reputation. Education and learning is important, but only if it advances your enjoyment of what you're doing.
And having fun along the way.
And having fun along the way. And that's what we do. Yeah, we do. And
very cool. Well, to learn more about your winery,
FieldsFamilyWines.com, or send Michael at FieldsFamilyWines.com a direct email, and I will get back to you. We'd love to have people come out and see us.
All right. You're right in Lodi.
We're off of 99.
Oh, 99. Okay.
Half a mile west of 99. Very easily accessible to everyone. We're open Thursday through Monday, 11 to 5.
If you're coming up to 5, it's an easy detour.
It's 5 more miles, yeah, but it's very... Lodi is that way. It's a very easily accessible from north to south, east to west. Many easy ways to get to the winery.
Thanks again.
Oh, thank you.
What fun.
My name's Steve Woodbridge Crossing. And you're in beautiful Woodbridge, California, about 0.5 miles from Lodi, California, just a United States landmark.
Tell us about Woodbridge. What a sleeper. Like you said, 3-4 miles from Lodi? I didn't even know this place existed. And it's like in its own time warp.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. The town of Woodbridge was the second area that was established here locally in the county behind Stockton. It was supposed to be the second largest city, actually, in the county. The building we're in now was built in 1865, and it was a central point for the feed and fuels, and they would haul money and prisoners and food, supply them here.
What's incredible about this place, it's like bulletproof, and I don't see one crack or any fractures in your brick walls that go floor to ceiling. How many feet tall is that brick wall?
Yeah, well, this one's 20 feet tall. The walls are 18 inches thick. It's exactly 3,000 square feet, because all the buildings that were built in that era used for this purpose are 100 by or 10 by 30. So it's 3,000 square feet, and that's a basement, main floor, and the upstairs, which was the residence as well.
When did you come in here? Did you remodel it? Did you create a restaurant yourself, or what? Did you take over from somebody?
No, actually, I have spent the last 16, 17 years working in Washington, D.C. Uh-huh. I'm originally from this area. And I finished up in D.C. in 06.
If I could ask, what were you doing in D.C.?
The staff directors on Capitol Hill. And so when I came home about 2010, I was afraid that they would want me to go back there. I don't know why. But anyway, I didn't want to go back. I had kids that were growing up, so I decided that I had to buy some brick and mortar. And this really wasn't what I had in mind. I was looking for a little gift shop or something, and a friend brought me out here, and I just fell in love with it.
What hooked you? Why did you make that leap?
Literally wanted a place where I would see more of my kids, and I had this Mayberry dream of sweeping sidewalks and putting the kids to work in here. And quite frankly, that's what's happening. Two of my kids are here tonight working. Two of them drive home from Chico on the weekends, and they work here on the weekends. So it's given me that opportunity to do it. The biggest reason is, quite frankly, I had no idea what I was doing and how much hard work it would take, or I probably wouldn't have.
This is the middle of the week in the fall, and yet this place is rocking out. Who are these people? Are they locals? Are they Lodi people? Where do they come from?
We have tourists that fill up a good chunk of the restaurant. They're coming here to visit, wine country.
Word of mouth for them.
We have a lot of the local families that have been coming here generation after generation. Tonight we have a wedding rehearsal dinner. We have our local musicians are in the house. They gather every Wednesday night here.
Kind of an open mic then?
Open mic. And it's a gathering spot. They'll bring their friends and try out new material.
Let's back up for a second. Give me a word picture of Main Street, of the town, architecture, setting. It's like a Hollywood movie set.
It really is. The original building, besides the Masonic Temple that sits behind us, we have this building, which was built in 1865. You have which was the Forrester's building next door. Those were the original buildings. And what happened when the town was being developed, the owner of the building went out in the street and there was an argument over a dog. And he was stabbed to death and killed. And that ended the development of Woodbridge.
Yes, he was a developer then?
He was the bill. I don't know if they had actually developers.
But he was the energy behind.
Correct. And then the railroad diverted west, went through Lodi, and the town as you see it is the way it was finished 150 years ago. You've got half the town of Lodi doesn't even know Woodbridge is.
I didn't either. And then
it was named after Woods, who built a ferry across the river, across the street, Woods Ferry. It became Woods Bridge.
Okay.
We're up to 153 wineries now in the area.
In the whole county area?
In the Lodi region.
In the AVA.
Within a shot, of the restaurant. We're sitting here right in the middle of it. And it pretty much sprouted. You're going to be at Lucas tomorrow Winery. Ken Lucas, along with the Phillips and some of the wineries, decided that they thought they could do more with the region, and they really are kind of the godfathers of the region in developing what we see here now. It's one of the largest, not because of the wineries, but our live music venues in this area are phenomenal. We actually have more live music venues here than they do in Sacramento right now.
That is amazing. I would never guess that. How do you explain that?
I really can't explain it. It's a concentrate. I always joke around, you can leave, but you can never, stay away forever. You're always going to come home. And that's kind of what happened to me. I wound up back here. But you've got very deep roots here in the valley, and it's kind of hard to pick up your farm and move. So they stay in the area.
Generation after generation.
Yes. Yeah, and then we're getting a lot of new residents. They're moving in from the Bay Area. And I love to sit down and joke with them about their, I joke around. I tell my friends I'm not going to the south side of Lodi. It takes me 5 minutes to get there. And, they're just loving it, here in the area right now.
So the name of your restaurant is?
It's the Woodbridge Crossing. A lot of people knew it for years as the old Feed-In Fuel. There was a legal battle over the name some years ago, and the name was changed prior to me buying it. But yeah, this has got, a generational, historical place for parties and birthdays and special events for generations. So.
a signature dish? You know, what type of food do people associate with it?
Well, we're known for our prime rib. We serve it 7 days a week. One of our bartenders, Santi, who used to own a restaurant in Stockton called Santiago's, always tells people we have the best calamari in seven counties. I would argue it's more than that. We're known for our calamari. It's all fresh cut, you know, from the steaks. But it's great seafood. We're one of the only places to serve wild salmon. But it's steak and seafood, and along with some good old, you know, family comfort dishes, meatloaf and mashed potatoes, et cetera.
And you serve wine, I noticed.
We have a very large wine menu. I was at a winery dinner about 3 or 4 months ago, and one of the winery owners, Ken Lucas, had made the comment while he was accepting an award. He thanked the restaurants for the partnership he had created with the wineries. And I kind of got down on myself because I didn't think we really had done as good of a job as we could. So the next day I had gotten in the car and I went and visited probably 24 wineries and said, we need to change that. So I've got a two-page, you know, wine list. And obviously I've got 10 wineries represented here, along with some great, you know, Napa Valley wines and actually German, French, a few others as well. Yeah, it's a wine region. We've got to have a great wine menu.
I love it. Okay, for further information, you guys like Facebook, or we have a website?
We've got it. I don't understand it all, but we have it all.
Neither do I.
The webpage is woodbridgecrossing.net. You can find us on Facebook. And if you go either to the Apple Play Store or the Google Play Store, we have our own app. So Woodbridge Crossing. And my name is Steve Ding, and I'm the proprietor of Woodbridge Crossing.
Thanks, Steve. And I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Woodbridge, California, right down the road from Lodi. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
Associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Molly Blaisdell, San Francisco, and Katya Singel, San Luis Obispo, California.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the Society in putting food on the table for people in need. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org. And whether you're shopping for new or used items, donating them, or volunteering, you're helping the Society of St. Vincent de Paul help others.